anyone of your friends says otherwise, give them a cell phone number or just share this graphic because I do want, first and foremost, to instill confidence in the community that this bridge is going to get open. It's going to get open by the end of March.
There you go, Alex Andrade. We talked to him yesterday, and this has been the consistent message from him, from Grover Robinson, from Sam Abel, city manager in the city of Gulf Breeze, about the expectation that FDOT is on schedule for the end of March reopening for Three Mile Bridge. Joining us now, we have Commissioner Robert Bender, District 4. That's the city of Pensacola plus Pensacola Beach. Commissioner, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Morning, Andrew. How are you doing this morning?
I am good. How is your level of confidence in the target of March 31st at latest?
Well, I know FDOT feels pretty good about it, that they're ahead in some areas, and that's, you know, so they're, of course, not waiting on things like driving piles. Those are ahead of schedule, and they've so we have
Wait, hold on. I thought driving piles, they were behind schedule. That's why they had to add a crew and go to 24-hour a day.
They said they were ahead. It was the they were a little behind on, I think, placing the trophies.
Okay.
They just placed the first one last week.
That's new.
Confident that they have enough time to catch up. And, you know, they said, hey, we're supposed to do one every, like, 3 or 4 days. We could do 4 of them in 5 days if we needed to, you know. So there was a little issue with some debris that was underneath one of the piles that they were driving, and so they moved on. When I talked to FDOT, they likened it to a house. You know, at first, once the frame gets up, you can get the plumber, the electrician to come in, things like that. That's why they brought in that third crew, was that there was room for them to work and that they weren't going to be on top of each other. But yeah, the Santa Rosa Commissioner, Dave Peach, Mayor Gulf Breeze, Mayor of Grover Robinson, myself, along with Alex Andrade and Senator Broxson are on this call with FDOT, and they still feel like that timeline is accurate.
Okay, well, obviously, I certainly hope I'm wrong, but I have said pretty consistently that I do not expect it, but I hope I'm wrong. I hope as soon as possible that thing can be open. The other end of the bridge, though, the north end, where, of course, the intersection with Bayfront, 17th, Chase, Gregor is all closed down right now because of work on putting in the flyover for the northbound span. The southbound span is going to be at grade with the roundabout. The northbound span is going to be the flyover for safety during a hurricane. I just wanted to ask you a little bit about this because I think it's fascinating. The design there, aside from separating the traffic flows, is also designed to create a safety measure so that the bridge will function even in a high storm event, right?
I have not heard that. I would see it as you've got, you know, I'm going to throw this out there. I don't know for sure, but, you know, maybe 90% of your traffic that goes on to Gregory or Bayfront instead of going to 17th. So it does allow, you know, you're removing the lighted intersection. It's allowing that traffic to flow freely off the bridge and not have to stop. To me, that was the biggest thing is that you kept traffic flowing without having to stop.
Obviously can't drive during the event, but like shortly thereafter that the flood would come through, and because it's elevated, it would still be functional. If we had to turn the northbound span into a two-way route, that would also be available.
You'd still need to check your bridges and everything like that. But I'm sure if there is any damage that, you know, of course we've seen where Bayfront Parkways has sustained damage before. If they're doing anything like the repair we made to Bob Sykes Bridge, I feel more confident that we could take a Hurricane Sally-like storm again and not receive the damages that we took to the around the footings of the Bob Sykes Bridge because of the way we engineered it and repaired it. I think if it's done properly, hopefully we wouldn't have any damage to begin with. But at least it's there if needed.
And one of the things, I know the mayor had talked about this yesterday in his press conference, right now that intersection is closed, but we're trying to figure out a way that we can maybe use that in the interim until that intersection is really finished, right, so you can have access to 17th Avenue?
It is. I know the mayor's going to meet with FDOT again, but we had a lengthy discussion about it last week. Of course, our concern is making sure that once the bridge reopens, the traffic has somewhere to go. This is, of course, something that was planned even, you know, had the bridge been open, there were going to have to be closures like this to 17th Avenue. That it's just that they were able to do a lot of it while the bridge is down. But they are working expeditiously on getting that interchange up and running, and hope to have minimal impact and try to get it open as close to when the bridge gets reopened as possible.
By the way, just to go back for just a second, I was just looking because I was trying to while you were telling me about the piles being ahead of schedule. I went back and looked at the graphic they just put out yesterday, and I think they were ahead of schedule on the precast. I'm not sure that they're saying they were ahead of schedule on the actual construction. So just for people who are listening, I think that's that. Unless you think I'm really wrong, I think that might be where you and I are kind of talking apples and oranges there for a second. One of the reasons I wanted to have you on, Commissioner Bender, is because last week you traveled to Tallahassee, and Administrator Gilley also traveled to Tallahassee. You guys were going to look at the tiny home project they have there, right? What did you guys see? What did you learn?
So we saw three things, really. So there, and it's a three-pronged approach. So I think this is important to understand, is that I don't think necessarily that tiny homes, I think they're part of the discussion. I don't think they're the only solution. And so we started at the Kearney Center, which is almost a come-as-you-are shelter. And I think they about 380 is how they could house each night, one-third women, two-thirds men. They provide meals. But more importantly, they provide resources.
And so now, is that a city facility? Is that a city-run facility?
No, it's not.
Okay.
And that's the great thing, or not great thing, but important thing to note, that it's not government-based. I think the city donated the land, but they built the building and operate it, and there's two organizations that help run it.
Okay.
Along with a lot of private donors and things like that. And there's no limit on number of nights. I mean, there are people that, you know, hopefully it's more of a temporary thing while you get back on your feet. But if you want it to be more permanent, you can do that. And then you see St. Selma's graduate to Westgate, which is more dorm-style living. They also have just a place someone who needs a rack or something like that to come into. But it's people that have started to help themselves, that are getting on their feet, have some income. And then after that, then comes the tiny homes. So, again, you don't want to just their model is you don't just give somebody the keys to a tiny home right off the bat.
Okay, so it's like it's a stair-step kind of system that's designed to move you from one phase to the next depending on your needs and capabilities.
Yes.
Interesting. All right.
Exactly.
And this is all in one central location?
They're spread out. They're, I mean, within a couple miles of each other, but the dwellings, the tiny home community is all together, and I think it was important for me to see that, because as we discussed the ordinance later this week, I think there's some things that can change, you know, like not having to have a driveway in front of every house.
Uh-huh.
They didn't have it there. It clearly worked fine, but it was a very nice facility. Of course, it's a little bit newer. I mean, each of the tiny homes are different in some way, you know, either being color or the motif that's, you know, in the wood railings around the front porch or something like that, to give some sense of individualism. And but there's also a community. They have a great gathering spot that provides three meals a day. They have a garden and things like that. So it was really great to see how they've put this in place.
Chairman, you were just talking about the tiny home thing, and one question I had is, are they provided to the residents free of charge, shared costs? There's a rent. How does that work?
So they have three floor models, and they range from, I think, $600 a month to $900 a month.
Okay.
So it is the cost, but that includes three meals a day. They've had to change that a little bit maybe not hot meals, all three, but three meals nonetheless. It comes with cable. It has everything you would need for the house. I mean, silverware, plates, all of that comes with it. So it's really to give, you know, provide some low-cost stability as people, maybe come out of the situation they were in, get on their feet, find a job, Usually you have to have a job by you get to this point. But really just give them some stability but really a sense of community. I mean, people hang out on the front porches, they come visit each other. And one thing I've said is that we heard the word hope a lot. Everywhere somebody went, it was hope to get better or be in a better place than they were. So that was, I think that was really important. So
it sounds,
I think there'll
sounds
probably be
wonderful.
Some changes that we do to the ordinance. But.
Yeah. The possibility of patterning something off of that here. I love the idea. I love the idea of the community. It's kind of a hybrid of a housing project and a college dorm. It sounds like to me, and you know, which I love it. It all makes sense to me. So I'm really glad that you went. I'm fascinated by this. What was the name of it again?
So you had the dwellings for the tiny homes. Westgate was the dorm-style housing, and then you had the Kearney Center, which was the come-as-you-are shelter.
All right, very interesting. Well, I look forward to the conversation we're going to have in the county commission about this, but thanks for going and putting eyes on it and bringing back your notes. Commissioner Robert Bender, District 4, City of Pensacola, plus the beach. Commissioner, thanks for the time, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Andrew. Have a good morning.